Good evening. This is Sandra Brown with the Institute for Relational Harm Reduction. Thank you for joining us tonight on one of our free teleseminars in which we are going to talk about the super traits of personality. But before we get started, we may have some new listeners that are not that familiar with the Institute, so I'll give you a little background information, then we'll jump in. The Institute is a trauma-informed agency that works with survivors of pathological love relationships that are often referred to as narcissistic and psychopathic abuse. Our early book, How to Spot a Dangerous Man, that came out in 2005, discussed the narcissistic and psychopathic relationship. And then in 2008, a book about the total narcissistic and psychopathic relationship dynamics, Our Women Who Love Psychopaths book, came out. And it actually launched the narcissistic abuse field. It was the first book ever about those types of relationships. So since that time, we have been serving survivors through telecounseling, through our articles on our newsletter, social media, retreats, and research. And what we're going to talk about tonight is taken from some of our research. You can find out more about the Institute at our website, which is saferelationshipsmagazine.com. So we'll go ahead and jump in. And the reason I wanted to do a little teleseminar tonight about the super traits is because when I'm out on the internet, I'm probably seeing the same thing you are seeing, which are these statements about narcissists and empaths, or narcissists and psychopaths and codependency. And the Institute is the only person thus far that has spent years studying the narcissistic relationships and the survivors. And we began kind of putting this stuff together over the years of treating a lot of survivors coming out of these relationships long before there was anything called narcissistic abuse. I've been in the field for 30 years. And so I began looking at this stuff decades ago when I was getting survivors of these types of relationships. And, you know, had a long time to think about and see the patterns that were emerging in the survivors, the similarities in their profile and their personality. And I got curious about it. And in 2007, I did a small personality research on survivors. And it noted some really interesting personality trait elevations. And I wrote about that in the first edition of the Women Who Love Psychopaths book, and then continued to try to go deeper into that study, and finally was able to hook up with Purdue University a few years later, and we did a very large scale, 600 women that we interviewed and personality tested to see what is it in their personalities that is consistent and that is being targeted. And so the outcomes of that is the only real science that we have about the similarities in your personalities and what is likely being targeted. There is no scientific studies about narcissists, psychopaths, and codependents. There's nothing. There is no scientific study about narcissists, psychopaths, and empaths. The only thing that we do have is the outcomes from the Purdue study, which we're going to talk a little bit about tonight. So that's where this information will be coming from tonight, is taken from what we found with Purdue. There's quite a few chapters about this in our latest book, which is the third edition of Women Who Love Psychopaths. It's the white cover front. So we're going to just sort of highlight some of this tonight, but if you want to go deeper into the material, there's several chapters in the book that you can go deeper into. So I want to talk a little bit about personality and why I thought this was important enough to take several years out of my life to research. And that's because everybody has a personality. And I don't think we've paid a lot of attention to personality, our own personalities, or really how personality might impact us, unless we had something really difficult in our personality, like maybe shyness. Other than that, if our personalities haven't caused us a lot of problems in our normal relationships, there's no reason for it to come onto our radar. It just, your personality just is. And we don't tend to really know that there's something a little bit out of the norm in our personality until something big happens, like the pathological love relationship. And so when we're discussing personality, it means our proclivity or our nature, our predisposition, our tendencies, our characteristics, or just the way we are. Or in other words, our hardwiring. And personality is pretty stable, you know, over our lifetime. We pretty much stay similar in our personality, unless we have trauma, in which trauma does change the presentation of our personality until we get through trauma treatment and have some resolution there. But I don't think we've given a whole lot of thought about the other end of personality, hardwiring. So if you have been, you know, cruising around the internet and reading stuff, you know, on narcissism or psychopathy, the one thing you read over and over again is they don't change. And there's a number of reasons that are all in the book about why they don't change. But one of the reasons is that our personality is pretty hardwired. We come into the world with certain personality proclivities, like you're either introverted or extroverted. And those don't change a lot through your lifespan. Again, if you have trauma, you might have been much more extroverted and become more introverted during your active trauma. But the personality pretty much stays the same. And so when we're thinking about that the narcissists or psychopaths have personality hardwiring, that their behaviors and proclivities or tendencies in their personality don't change a lot, we haven't looked at the other end of that in their partners. And that's what I was curious about with you guys, because, you know, over the decades of doing this work, I kept a lot of notes about this theory that was sort of forming for me during treatment, and that you guys had very similar personalities. You had a very similar profile, and not a profile that fit other survivor types, like the sort of traditional domestic violence survivor profile. Your profiles were very, very unique. And so thinking about sort of how the relationship endured, what might be some of the personality factors on both ends of this relationship that kept it in motion? Because you have, on one hand, you know, a narcissist or psychopath that has all of these deficits in their personality. And on the other hand, you have these survivors who have some abundance of traits, personality traits that are vastly and absolutely opposite of the narcissist or psychopath. And so I was interested in how these personality dynamics basically kept the relationship going. So when you're out there on the internet, you probably are reading quite a bit about how they hide well. And that seems to be sort of the catch phrase for why the relationships have longevity. But sooner or later, they don't hide well. And sooner or later, the mask flips, but the relationship continues. I would say 99.9% of survivors do not leave when the mask flips. In fact, they don't leave for a long time after the mask flips. So my interest was in how those personalities operated within the relationship, and if there were personality factors in the survivor that actually, in certain situations, worked against her in keeping her in the pathological relationship. And so that's what we're going to talk about. So personality, our personality actually, you know, impacts our thoughts, our behaviors, and our responses. And if you think about what we know most about personality is what we know about personality disorders. And if you think back to your pathological partner, his personality definitely impacted how he thought, felt, his emotions, how he related to you and other people, and ultimately his behavior, because that's what personality governs, not just in personality disorders, but in all of our personalities. And so your personality and this, your super traits that we're going to talk about influence how you think, feel, relate, and behave. And they can also, what we found out with you guys, impact how survivors read or don't read red flags, which has, of course, an enormous impact on prevention and relapse potential, that survivors' personalities can impact whether or not they are not just receiving an intuitive message, but whether or not they respond. And so personality turns out to be very a very important filter for how we read incoming information and what we do with it and how we see the world. And so if we were looking at personality on a bell curve, in a bell curve is like a hill that goes up to the middle and then comes down the other side. And that's called a bell curve graph. And personality disordered people are on the far end of that, where from the top on either side, where the line just runs off the page. Personality disordered people have way too much of some things and way too little of other things. And on that bell curve, at the very top of the hill, is what they call the sweet spot. It's the safety net, or sort of the area where they would like to see most people fall, which is in the normal range. The abnormal ranges are both on the far end where the line trails off, and that's where personality disorders are. The rest of us are pretty much up there on the top of the bell curve, in the normal enough range. And so for a lot of years, psychology has studied those the extremes in personality, but the only extremes they were studying were personality disordered people. They weren't studying those of us who were up on that center part of the normal enough on the bell curve to see if we are just a tad bit to the right or to the left, if it does anything negative to us, to our relationships. Was there any kind of negative outcome? And so that's where we began looking. And so we found two personality traits that were a tiny bit that fell into not the normal range, but the high normal range. And Purdue said that if we had not drawn this to their attention, that it was just such a slight movement off normal into high normal that most people would never have picked up on this tiny little step past the sweet spot, the safety net of behavior. In fact, when we were studying all of this, we found that the only place that this high normal personality traits were problematic was in a relationship with an antagonistic type personality, a cluster B, borderline, narcissist, antisocial, or psychopath. And that you were likely not to have known that you even had personality trait elevations a tiny bit off of the sweet spot and the safety net until you got into a relationship with a narcissist or a psychopath. So the traits that we're going to talk about tonight, I'm just going to just sort of highlight that. I really wanted to talk about why personality is important. And you can read the chapters about it to get the breakdown of that. But these are, you know, two of the personality traits that are measured in all people. And you guys, they were in the high normal area, and the narcissists and psychopaths, they were in the very low amount. And these are beautiful traits. And I want to reemphasize that this does not mean that you have a personality disorder. You are not on that end of the spectrum on the bell curve. You are two steps to the right of the center of the bell curve, but just a smidge too much of a couple of personality traits that ends up putting your personality to be exactly what psychopaths and narcissists look for. So before I get into those, I want to talk about this issue about codependency. And again, there's a whole chapter in the book about this, about codependency and why super traits are different than that. So talk about a little bit about codependency and who fits that and who doesn't. So one of the interesting things was when we decided to test you guys was that there were a lot of assumptions being made by survivors, survivor bloggers, and even other therapists, that these super traits of personality that makes you empathetic and compassionate and tolerant and patient were signs of codependency. Codependency, first of all, is not even a clinical diagnosis. It's nowhere in the DSM. It's pop psychology that came out of the addiction field. And the symptoms of it are so broad that anyone walking down the street could fit themselves somewhere under the symptoms of codependency. But the interesting thing is that codependency is related to external circumstances. So if you grew up in an aversive childhood in which there was abuse or neglect, or you had alcoholic or addict parents or pathological parents or some kind of aversive childhood experience, those were external factors that could lead to codependency-like symptoms. But the interesting thing was, when I was, you know, treating these survivors over the last few decades, so many of them did not have those aversive childhoods. And when other therapists were sending them to codependency groups, they kept saying, I didn't have any of this as a child. Why am I being, you know, sent to codependency when I had a pretty normal childhood? I wasn't abused. My parents were, you know, pretty normal. I didn't have any of the markers for creating codependency. So when we did the testing with Purdue, we included an assessment that looked at aversive childhood experiences in over 60-some percent of you did not have aversive childhoods that would generate the behaviors of codependency. And so, and yet, your profiles were still similar, whether you had an aversive childhood or whether you did not. Your personalities and what happened in these relationships and the kinds of trauma that came out of these relationships was the same. So it could not be just codependency as an issue when 60%, over 60% of you did not have that as an experience. So that's when we began digging in. So if it's not an external experience, like an aversive childhood, then it must be some internal aspect related to personality. And so, let me find my page here. So what we found were these two beautiful traits that were two steps over from the sweet spot and the safety net. And the first trait is called agreeableness. And it's what we call the relationship investment trait. It is likely the trait that is most targeted by other pathological partners. And it's a trait that makes you the warm, open, loving, compassionate, beautiful person that other people who are normal love most about you. And we call it the relationship investment trait because this trait of agreeableness, especially two steps over the safety net, is what instills in you the great desire for good relationships. You guys are more relationship invested by nature, by your hardwired personality, to get great joy and depth out of relationships. Other people who have less agreeableness in their personality makeup are less invested in relationships. Sure, they like them. Everybody needs one. But this is like a core issue, a core value with people who have high normal agreeableness. And so there are facets, which is another way of saying parts, that make up this overall trait of agreeableness. These all go together as parts that make up this trait. So these are not separate traits. These are all part of the agreeableness trait. And so the first facet is the facet of trust. And again, this is a natural proclivity, hardwired. You don't have to sit around and think, you know, pull this up from your toes in order to get this going in you. It just naturally is that you have high levels of trust. You are trusting of others and are trustworthy. You are optimistic about human nature and tend to see others through who you are. We can see right there where that can be a problem in a pathological relationship when you are naturally, not from codependency, but naturally hardwired to be, before trauma, optimistic about human nature, including the ability to change, and that you tend to see others through who you are or project, in a way, your own normalcy on them. And, of course, in the early parts of the pathological relationship, that's exactly what happened. You assumed his motivations and his interests, you know, were like yours. And whatever you did see that was becoming problematic, you were still optimistic about his ability to change. So that's a facet of trust. The next facet is straightforwardness, which means you are upfront, honest, and confiding. Could be part of how what often happens in the early part of the relationship with over-disclosure, because you're not over-disclosing or being, I don't even want to call it that, being upfront and honest. Because you're needy, like in codependency, it is because by nature you are upfront. If somebody asks you something, you're going to tell them what they ask for. You're honest and, you give them what they're looking for. The next facet is a giving nature that, in this agreeableness, the giving nature is altruistic and is sacrificial, has a sacrificial nature in relationships. They're considerate. They're willing to compromise her interests for the sake of others, and even a little bit sentimental. And so that altruistic and sacrificial nature in relationships is seen, you know, by the outside people who are not looking at personality as a factor in how you think, feel, relate, and behave, and they see that naturally occurring altruism and sacrificial sort of nature and label it codependency. When it has nothing to do with being altruistic to keep a relationship, you're altruistic with everyone. It's your hardwiring. And so the motivation, therapists and survivor bloggers, are getting the wrong tilt on looking at sort of the motivation behind some of these behaviors that we see in survivors that have nothing to do with the motivation that they're assuming and everything to do with just naturally occurring hardwired personalities, which is a whole different ballgame. The next facet is cooperation under the trait of agreeableness. You are prone to assisting rather than attacking. You are motivated by social harmony. You are reciprocal in relationships, helpful. You value getting along with others, avoiding conflict. You're sociable, motivated by helping, sharing, donating, and volunteering. And so by nature, you are cooperative by nature, not a doormat by nature, which is, often associated with the neediness connected to codependency. You are cooperative by nature, not by neediness. The next facet is humbleness. You are modest in your portrayal of yourself, so that automatically sort of makes you the opposite of the narcissist, which is grandiose. You are gentle, well-tempered, warm, approachable, and likable. And so we can see where that facet, is helpful for the narcissist and psychopaths in their approach, because you are not, you probably are now, but back then, before the damage of the pathological relationship, you were not a highly guarded person, tend to be open and warm and approachable. The next facet is empathy. And this is where all this crap on empaths and psychopaths comes from. This is one facet that makes up the whole trait of agreeableness. This is not the whole enchilada. This is one part of agreeableness. And in addition to empathy, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 other facets in that trait to be concerned about. It's not just hyper-empathy that has gotten you in trouble. It is all these facets that work together and make up agreeableness that all contribute to what is being targeted. If you're in there, thinking you're going to protect your hyper-empathy as a way of prevention, and you don't understand all the other facets that are also elevated and hanging out there to be a target, you are protecting, one-eighth of that trait. You're protecting your empathy, but there's much more to it than that. So empathy is being tender-minded, kind, generous, compassionate, peacemaking, and forgiving. The next facet is loyal, that you value allegiance to other people, faithfulness, and you are committed to your obligations. And So we can see we're having, you know, a higher level of loyalty, even in a pathological relationship, you know, can create sort of the gorilla glue, the super glue, that keeps you tied in the relationship way past safety, or what Dr. Patrick Carnes talked about in his book, The Betrayal Bond, which is about trauma bonding, what he called insane loyalty. And so he was looking at it more in terms of what happened within the relationship externally, again, just like the external factors of codependency, these external factors of whatever is happening in the relationship to create a trauma bond without ever looking at naturally occurring loyalty in the personality that was already there long before this relationship and long before the trauma bond. And the last facet that makes up the agreeableness is called the trait of of tolerance. And that is the being tolerant of differing opinions and behaviors. And so the ability to tolerate some pretty bad behavior, you know, when the mask slips, and the behavior is just hanging out there for all to see, you guys have more than other people have in the area of tolerance. So your line in the sand, when you have girlfriends that do not have super traits, they have probably said to you, his ass would have been out of here on date two, because she doesn't have this high, as high a level of agreeableness in her personality as you do. That means her line in the sand for tolerating differing behavior is not as far out into the sand as someone who has more than a little bit more than a normal amount in agreeableness. And so survivors are not simply tolerant to people please, like in codependency. They were tolerant before the pathological relationship, before the mask slip. They're tolerant with everyone. It's what made them successful in whatever their career is because they're the peacemakers, they're tolerant of other people's antics in the office, and you know, it contributes to success in relationships. So we go back to the issue that I said, that this trait of agreeableness is about relationship investment. And all of these traits that we have talked about support the importance of relationships. Trust, straightforwardness, a giving nature, cooperation, humbleness, empathy, loyalty, and tolerance. All traits that contribute to relationship success. And for many of you, you've had other very successful and meaningful and deep relationships. Didn't have to be intimate relationships, but that you guys, you know, tend to value relationships, so you keep the same friends, you know, for years or decades or from childhood. Your relationships at work work. Your relationships with other people work. because you are naturally endowed in this agreeableness trait with all these facets that make you really good at relationships. Except in pathological relationships, in which I don't care what you're endowed with, it ain't happening. And so this trait of agreeableness is a wonderful trait and has contributed to the healthy relationships that you have been able to maintain in your lifetime. So that is the elevated super trait of agreeableness. We have one more elevated trait, but I don't think we're going to have time. We're going to have to come back and do this with the second trait, which is called conscientiousness. Or you can read about it in the book, but I am going to rebook another one so we can spend as much time on the trait of conscientiousness, because that's the trait where you develop and why you develop cognitive dissonance. And that warrants a lot of conversation about that. So what I'm going to do is I have everybody muted right now, so we didn't get the background noise. And I'm going to unmute. And if your background's really loud, if you would press, let's see. No, I'll just do it. All right. So I'm going to unmute it, and I'm going to open up for questions, anything that we have covered about personality, or if you want to talk about the facets under this trait of agreeableness, I'll take some questions. And you're going to, once I unmute you and wait, because I'm going to tell you when I do it, you're going to press *6 to get into the queue. Only press it one time, and it will put you in order in the queue. All right, let me try this. Hold up. All right, does anybody have a question? No? Okay. All right, well, if we don't have questions, I'm going to go ahead and wrap up the call. Stay tuned to the Institute Facebook page, and I will be posting when we have the part 2 for the super traits of personality in covering the trait of conscientiousness. So I want to thank everybody for joining me tonight. This has been Sandra Brown with the Institute. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sandra.
Thank you.
Good night. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Question?
Yeah.
I think that *6 didn't really work.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I tried that too.
Okay, go ahead.
Should I go ahead and ask the question?
Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to ask you what test you are using, the personality test that you are using?
The first one, when we did it in 2007, we used the TCI, which is the Temperament Character Inventory. And okay. In 2014 with Purdue, we used the five-factor model.
Five-factor.
Yeah, and the okay. five-factor form. There's two versions of that, the five-factor model and the five-factor form. And we used both of those. So you guys have actually been tested on three different assessments, and it all comes out the same. So it's pretty strong.
I have another question. I lost my best friend to domestic violence in this kind of a relationship. And is there, if you have a friend who is going down this path, can you, is there anything you can do?
You can certainly, you know, reach out and give her information. As you know, there's, you know, the cycles of this, of, you know, which is really cognitive dissonance, returning, making up, breaking up, making up, break, and you get, there's, they go through those cycles. And so getting information in her hand for Plan B when she's ready is certainly helpful.
Well, she was killed. But we tried to, you know,
Right.
You know, I think with the cognitive dissonance, is there any way to get through that?
The cognitive dissonance is the longest part of treatment. And you can pull it down a few notches with pathology education when they find out information about what the disorder is and that with, you know, that is not going to change, that it's hardwired in them. It does reduce some of the cognitive dissonance, but, you know, the big part of treatment is pulling down this cognitive dissonance layer by layer, and that's really what takes time and recovery.
And if they don't have any inclination to, if they're so deep into it that you can't get through to them, there just isn't anything to do.
Yeah, well, there is, you know, staying in contact with them and supporting them because, you know, one night she might be calling when she's having the shit beat out of her and needs a place to go. And just giving her the resources so that she knows she does have choices when she gets to that point. You know, short of hostage taking, we can't get them out, you know, until they're ready.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
I had a quick question. I don't know. If you had ACEs in your childhood, but it also seems like your personality was like this, even like naturally, maybe it would be a combination, I wonder.
Yes. There can be, but next time when we go over conscientiousness, I'm also going to go over a chart that compares codependency with super traits, and you can then hear and figure out which one is more true for you. So personality is at the core, and, you know, codependency is external behaviors. So when I go over that list comparing codependency to super traits, some of that, one side or the other, is going to resonate with you. You'll find yourself probably stronger on one side or the other, and that's important to know because, you know, you can't treat what you don't know. You could be going to codependency counseling, and that's not it. Or you could be trying something else and you really do need codependency work.
Sure.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. Okay. stay tuned to the Institute Facebook page, and we'll get scheduled for the next teleseminar when I go over conscientiousness and codependency versus super traits. So thank you for joining me tonight. This has been Sandra Brown. Thank you, and good night.
Ask one more question.
Thank you.
Is there room for one more question?
I think she might be signed off.
Signed off. Okay.
Try next time.
Thanks, you guys. Also, if you read her book, it answers so many of the questions. Be sure to read the book, latest edition.
Thanks, guys. Good night.